Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking and arrive at better health and fitness solutions. That's where that stuff comes from. Oh, we're actually recording this now.
I thought maybe you wouldn't notice it. You just keep talking about the sweep of the VL.
The sweep of the outer thigh.
Yeah, okay. I remember like the lat sweep. Well, where does the word sweep even come from?
I don't know.
What are they referring to?
It's science.
Yeah, the bodybuilding literature.
It's the literature. Is that literature?
I haven't gotten into it that much. I've decided at this very moment that we're going to talk about foam rolling again.
Okay.
So today we're going to talk about, we've talked about foam rolling in the past though, but a lot of people on the network are still trying to figure some stuff out. Bill and I just had a great conversation about an athlete that I work with, and we talked a lot about foam rolling and shape change and bony bends. Yes. With that, yes. That video series will be coming out soon on the network. So if you want to become a part of that, you can get on for a free 3-day trial if you would like to see what UHP Plus is about, and then come and join us. We got hundreds of people in there, practitioners and enthusiasts alike, all asking some great questions, posting some great case studies, and making Bill answer questions pretty much constantly.
What else do I have to do, really?
Yeah.
I literally just sit here alone in this tiny room.
You just sit. Bill has a chair that just suspends him in the middle of the room, and he has six screens. It's like something out of the Matrix. So foam rolling, the last episode, if you want to check that out, we talk a little bit more about like the origins of foam rolling and historically what it's people have thought it does and what it is actually doing. But this time, I think we're just going to jump right into more of like what it actually is accomplishing and the ways that people use it incorrectly, I guess, and like why the directionality of how you foam roll matters, why the amount of time and the influence of pressure and dosage matters, how you're actually accomplishing two separate things that are very useful with, you know, turning down muscle tone to get rid of any type of muscular interference and then shaping the bones to allow for the subsequent use of the muscle to actually help retain that shape, which I think is an important thing that people don't. Because a lot of times it's just this like rub the elbow to get the pain to go away and then leave it. And then everything that got you into that painful position or that movement compensation to begin with, all those behaviors, they still exist and you just revert back to them. You're not actually like you're not realigning the car, if you will.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm not sure the best way to approach this, but I guess we could
technique?
Talk about like,
how about
yeah,
we do some
let's
technique?
Talk about foam rolling techniques.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So speed matters, direction matters, pressure matters, object size matters. So there you go. So now we got to say, well, what does each one of these influence? So if we took, so people use like lacrosse balls and stuff like that all the time. Okay. But if I was to use a golf ball instead of a lacrosse ball, the surface area gets smaller, which means that the application of pressure is greater and more focal. Okay, it can be. It doesn't have to be, but it can be. So like if I was trying to get to a deeper structure in a smaller area and I'm like, again, just to gain access, I have to use a smaller contact. So if we were doing manual therapy, we would use different hand contacts, finger contacts, like just finger pressure versus hand pressure versus, you know, like superficial tensions versus deeper, you know, elbows. People use elbows. People use forearms, like to sort of like a planing kind of a pressure. This is where some of the tool based stuff actually kind of comes into play because they're just you know, altering the focal nature of the pressure, and then again directionality, right? So The size of the implement would matter. So if you're not using your hands or your elbows or whatever, and you're just trying to do this stuff to yourself, you say, where is this structure? And then how big is this structure? And then what's the best way to access it? So deeper, more focal, then I need a smaller implement. So we were talking earlier when we're going through your client's thing about the different size rollers that you use to access different spaces. And so if we look at the posterior hip, and if I'm superficial, it's a big space, very easy to access with your traditional Ethifoam or Styrofoam, you know, 6-inch diameter, 3 feet long roller. Like you can get access to most of those superficial spaces with that. It tends to do really, really well because the way that energy is transferred through the system, they're pretty good sized, you know, waves that transfer the energy. For me to get into a deeper, smaller space, now we're talking about like a 3-inch diameter space. Again, so it's just like the concept of the lacrosse ball versus the golf ball. It's like, if I got to get into a deeper area, I need a smaller implement. So we'll go as small as something like a tiger tail, which is, I don't know how big a diameter, like the stick, tiger tail. What's the other one? The rod, I think, which is kind of weird.
The rod.
Well, but they're all different diameters. And so, so that provides us, like, again, access to different spaces. So that's a consideration, like right off the bat, is what tool am I going to use? Some people use like those little knobbler thingies to get into small spaces. You could use like a gua sha tool, right? Mm-hmm. To create a very focal pressure, right? That creates more of like a planing kind of a representation of the way that you would compress the tissue and then create your space. So again, that all of those things matter first. So we think about like, where do I have to go? What is the best tool for the job under that circumstance? So that's step one. Okay. And so that gets us a depth and a shape. And so that's going to help us determine, you know, how we're going to start to do this stuff. So what was the other one? Direction?
What? Yeah. Well, you're the one that said it.
Well, hey,
short term. You already forgot over the course short of term. You talking. Short term. Yeah.
Well, you get on a roll. You get on a roll with certain things. So now you think about direction. And it's like, so, all right. So am I absorbing energy or am I delivering it to the ground? And so that will help you determine a representation of what direction that you might use. So if we go back to where, I don't even know what year this would be. It would probably be in the early 2000s when foam rolling got semi-popular with stuff.
Yeah.
Because there were some organizations that were really, really heavy on it, right? But it was just like, here's the muscle. Here's what you're rolling. Put it here, right? Kind of a thing. Versus understanding it's like, oh, I have situations where I'm delivering a force into the ground from me, or I'm absorbing energy, right, from the ground into me. And so then that determines directionality. If we're talking about like, you're basically a bag of water. So if I need the water to go in a certain direction, I need to make sure I'm pushing it in the right direction. And so if I am working on, say, into the cut scenarios, so that's me absorbing energy from the ground, right? So I land, my joints start to bend, I start to produce an early representation of internal rotation. So that's me absorbing energy. And so if I use a foam roller strategy where I am pushing the shape change away from me, so from proximal to distal, that is actually in conflict with the goal, because that's not the direction that the muscle activity would be producing the shape change. So I have to produce the shape change in the right direction. And so if, again, for into the cut type of activities, that's going to be a distal to proximal representation. So now we can talk about speed. Okay. So the faster you roll, so if I put my limb on the foam roller, the faster I roll, the more superficial the effect, because it takes time for the water in you to get out of the way to create the depth to whatever structure that you're working on. Right. So if I just seesaw back and forth and people go, yeah, foam rolling doesn't do anything for me. It's like, well, if you seesaw back and forth really, really fast, it's probably not going to do a whole lot for you. Right. Because the amount of shape change that you're able to promote, the amount of transfer potential of energy through the connective tissues is going to be limited. So if you go back to the to some of the research on foam rolling and they go, yeah, we rolled the hamstrings and we didn't see any changes. Right. Well, okay, so how you do it matters. And so your methods are going to help you determine what the outcome will be. So if I need to acquire depth, if I'm trying to magnify the effect on the connective tissues, I have to get depth. So now we need to slow down the pace of the roll. So we have a tool, we have a direction, and now we have depth, right? And the rate at which you're going to be moving across the whatever the implement would be, right? So again, that's going to determine the magnitude of the effect in the acute nature of this, right? So once again, if I am working on into the cut activities and I'm trying to gain access to a deeper structure, or I'm trying to magnify the effect on the connective tissues, I need to move proximal to distal with the appropriate sized implement at a slower rate. Okay. And they go, well, but then what do I do when I get to the end of that roll? So let's just say I'm doing tibialis anterior, right? Just as a representation. So I move slowly and tibialis anterior is like this long and I get to the end. Well, what do? I just move back in the other direction, but I move at a faster rate because if I move at a faster rate, there's no depth concern, right? So I'm not seesawing back and forth. I'm not trying to drive something that's in conflict. So I can move in one direction slowly. That's the primary intention, the primary effect. I move out of it quickly to back to the starting position. Now I can just start over. And so I create this cyclical kind of a nature. Okay. If I'm looking at this from an isolated muscle standpoint. Okay.
Right. So like you were saying, yeah, like an earlier into the cut representation is going to be distal to proximal.
Yes.
Okay. I think you misspoke. I think you said proximal to distal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. So just in case anyone like before, who is going to, I'm sure there's several people on the network who are already typing their comments about, but Bill, you said that, you said proximal to distal and, okay. What do you think?
let me make a statement about stuff in general.
Yeah.
Okay. So the more you talk, the greater your potential to make mistakes. Now, you don't make a lot of mistakes per unit of talk, but the more you talk, so like if, let's see, make one mistake out of 80% of the time that you talk, and the more you talk, that 80% gets bigger, so you make more mistakes with it.
Yeah. Well, this one was particularly a big mistake because it's a complete different, representation.
My apologies.
And I could be mistaken, but I think the first time you mentioned it, you said proximal to distal. The next time you said distal to proximal. Okay.
If I'm absorbing energy,
right.
It's going to be a distal to proximal representation. Yeah.
So if I'm trying to get an earlier representation on, say, my right side, or I'm trying to focus on my right side going into the cut, I'm going to roll. I'm going to predominantly focus on the foam rolling sequence from foot distal up to
generally speaking. Yeah.
Distal.
There will always be situations where, like, for there might be a reason that we would change our mind, but generally, like, I'm speaking on a general nature of concept. Yeah. It's like the energy is coming from the ground towards me. That means that I need to learn to absorb it, which means that it's going to be going this way.
And if you're so, and then like another side to that would be like using these principles. Like if I'm a manual therapist working with a track athlete, I might do like a really quick and hard proximal to distal rolling sort of massage right before they perform, because I'm trying to absolutely get the wave to go down and into the ground.
Absolutely. So you're priming
down through the
The thing you have to understand is that these connective tissues are sensing the differences. So they measure tensions, they measure pressures, right? They alter, they influence the fluid volume through the behavior of the nervous system. And so what we're trying to do is we're literally trying to reproduce the conditions, right, that these things happen through time, right? And so there's going to be the people that say hogwash, doesn't matter. And you know what? In some cases, you're probably going to do enough of the right stuff by accident that it probably won't seem like it matters. And then there's going to be the one time where it does. And that's what we're talking about. It's like, this is why it's important just to be consistent and coherent with your intentions and then with the application of everything that you do. The more coherent, we all make mistakes, right? But the more coherent that we can be with these things, the greater your outcomes, like the much more successful you'll be.
Right. And then I think something that people get caught up on when they get deeper into this and they have these questions of like, well, you know, wouldn't a wide and a narrow want to roll their VL in a different direction? And it's like, the one thing I want to get into is the directionality of taking certain muscles and influencing bends in opposite ends of bones. So like, like rolling, how in most circumstances, everyone's going to want to roll the VL from hip to knee. Like they're going to want to try to get that because that's where you see the differential in the bend.
Correct.
That's you can influence that differential in the bony bend of the femur.
Correct.
And that's across the board. So I'm not going to have like, because those bony bends are the same regardless of archetype. Correct.
Okay. Correct. Now let's talk about this because
yeah.
So there's a directionality and then there's a sequencing that needs to be appreciated.
So let's talk about the difference.
Okay. So, so if I'm looking at, if I have an orientation from the top down, okay, that means
so a narrow.
Okay, sure. I just want to make it absolute. It's like, if an orientation from the top down, then I know that the distal aspect of the change was the last quote unquote, it might be the last thing, but it'll be the last thing relative to this orientation. Okay. So to reverse engineer it, then you process this from the distal aspect to the proximal and you say, what influence down here? So if we're talking about a femur, so we got a proximal at the hip, we got a distal at the knee. It's like, so if this orientation ends at the knee, then I got to start looking at what influences this knee position. And then that's what I would address, but it's not going to tell me what necessarily direction to foam roll. It's going to say, I need to make sure that the stuff that's influencing the knee is addressed before the stuff that's influencing the hip. So that's a sequencing, right, of that influence, not the direction that you would necessarily roll, because in both cases, if I looked at the maximum amount of differential between the hip and the knee, regardless of the direction of the orientation, the muscle orientation looks the same, right? So the VL will still have more eccentric orientation proximally, more concentric orientation distally, because the twist that ultimately is represented looks the same. However, a narrow would be oriented from the top down. I got to go from knee to hip when I'm talking about what I'm trying to influence. And then the wide would be from the bottom up. So I would be more concerned about like how the hip is being influenced, and then I would work towards the knee.
So, okay.
By a shape change. I'm talking about a bone.
Yeah.
And then I'm talking about muscle orientation.
Right. Okay. So I'm going to...
So, go ahead.
Yeah. So
That's okay. Just me messing with my camera. Sorry.
Yeah. So in both instances, for a wide and a narrow who are trying to influence the bend of a femur, I'm still going to have both of them roll from hip to knee. That's the pressure wave is going to be down toward the knee, except with a narrow, I'm going to the order in which I, so I might do the, okay, I'm trying to think this out here. So with the wide, I might be doing the VL first and then doing the tibia second. And with the narrow, I might be doing the tibia first and then the VL second. So the order might be different.
But yeah, I'm still that's what I'm, that's what I'm
still
talking
rolling,
about.
I'm still rolling the muscle in the same way. It's just the sequence in which I'm rolling the muscles will be different.
Correct. Because okay. Because again, they were acquired in a different sequence.
Yeah. I'm gonna repeat that again because I still don't think anyone is with us. So what Bill is saying is that the influence of the muscles on the bony bends is going to be the same across the board, but the order in which you try to affect them will be different based on.
And yes. There you go. And there okay. You go. That's it. You got it. You got it.
So you sure. Will. So we've had questions where it's like, well, shouldn't I actually roll the VL from knee to hip for a wide or for a narrow versus a wide? And it's like, no, because that influence of eccentric and concentric orientation of the bony bends is actually the same for all, yes. For both archetypes, right? And okay. That's because we all have the same skeleton we're dealing with. It's just the,
yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. It's the same stuff. It's just the order in which the stuff happens is different.
Yeah.
Based on the yeah. Physics. Correct. Internal, okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. All right, well, that clears up stuff for me. Hopefully that helps with, now, hopefully that helps with everybody else.
Well, what it does is it creates 1,000 questions of combinations that everybody's yeah. Going to have, right?
Like yeah. Say, and
do I do this first and then this and then this? And it's like,
well, let's, because you, no. I mean, everyone that's listening doesn't know that you and I just kind of talked at length about this with our athlete right. Example. But
right.
When you're influencing the nature of, like, ultimately the goal of a narrow individual is I need to get out of the right side and into the left. So it's out of the cut on the right by pushing through the right foot to go from right to left. For a wide, I'm trying to unload the left side to allow me to not orient to the left when I push into the ground with my right.
Very good. Like, okay, that's brilliant. No, that's brilliant. That's it. It's like, woohoo.
Yeah, there's there you the go. Book. That's it.
Page one. Page yeah. One.
That's it, folks. You got it all right there. But anyways,
that was great. No, I love that, this. This is
but wonderful. With the foam rolling, I can affect that. So, like the Absolutely. Example that we were talking Absolutely. About with my athlete was proceeding with the sequence of foam rolling with this narrow athlete up the right side. So sequencing the foot, the tibia, the femur, the hip. The axial skeleton, the pelvis, the rib cage, yes. And then up the right side and then down the left side. So
yes, acquisition is it's acquisition of the accumulation of the ability to capture the right foot. That's essentially yes. What you're doing.
Yeah. Right?
Because when I capture the right foot, now I actually have the capacity to push into the ground in the appropriate direction that will move me from right to left.
Okay.
It's pretty so sweet. That, it's pretty yeah, sweet and, to see it.
But when I'm saying that, I'm going to reiterate this again. What I'm talking mm-hmm. about is a sequence of foam rolling activities that are going up. So foot, mm-hmm. tibia, femur, hip, whatever. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. in each one of those segments, I'm still influencing the muscles in the same way.
Yes.
So I'm still going to be doing a hip to knee VL roll. I'm not going to yes. go knee to hip because that Ooh. Would be up. And that would be a confusing thing to people because they're okay. going to think, okay, if I'm going up the right, I'm going to go up the VL from knee to hip, which is not
no, what it's a shape. No, it's yes. a shape and an orientation that create the direction. So that's,
yeah.
again, people confuse the muscle position with the concept of an anterior orientation, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So if let me explain the negative secondary consequences of rolling the VL in this circumstance from distal to proximal. Okay.
Yeah.
You will literally create a scenario that allows a magnification of the proximal shape of the femur into ER, which will pull the center of gravity farther to the right. potentially outside of the base of support, potentially literally turning the spine in the wrong direction so they can only go that way to the
right. So there's your person that says, oh, I foam roll the hell out of my quads and it just gets worse. So foam rolling doesn't work.
Yeah. Right. My knee still hurts. Why is my knee?
Yeah. I've rolled my quads like crazy. And it's because they're probably doing, they are exacerbating your problem.
Yeah. It's like manual therapies that don't respect the directionality. This is one of the reasons why you could be making a great decision in regards to concept, but the application of the method that leaves you hanging because like you had this perfect intention, like everything was right as far as your decision-making, your intention. And then you used a technique that literally took you in the wrong direction. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So
here's a
follow-up. I've got a wide. Who's down on the left?
Yeah,
is my would a logical sequence be to go up on the left with the rolling, up on the right with the rolling, and then down on the left to finish
to make the turn?
Yeah, so I would go up on the left to unload to get stuff to restore vertical dimension to the left, and then I would go up on the right to restore vertical dimension on the right, and then I would go down on the left.
You don't really have the same turn. You don't have the vertical dimension problem on the right side. So that would be a little bit of a misrepresentation because there's no loss of vertical dimension on that side. It's literally the turn that has to take place.
So then I would just go up on the left, up on the right.
Well,
and then would that be enough?
No. So to make the turn, there has to be the right side going forward, the left side going back, which is still that top down representation on the left side.
Okay.
It's on a little bit different. It's like, again, the helical angle is different, right? So it would be a little bit more of a flatter turn, if you will.
So what would, so what
the
would
helix,
the,
like the helix would be, it would be this way. It'd be this way. Like it would, like you'd be going that way.
So if we're going up the right, down the left with the narrow, what's the ideal? What would the ideal scenario be with the wide? Up the left, down the left? Forget the right.
No, because you've got a different representation. So if you think about, let me give you a roll that will do it.
Okay.
Okay. So if you restore vertical dimension on the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you wanted to make the turn inside of the base of support. You could do like a top down, right to left supine to prone roll.
Okay, so that would be an arm driven.
Yeah.
Segmental roll.
Yeah, because that's gonna what. And the reason being is that's going to turn the spine. It's actually going to turn the spine from right to left.
Yeah.
Right? So I get my sacrum to make the turn under that circumstance.
So then back to foam rolling though. What should I just keep the sequencing the same then? For a while,
it would be similar.
Up the right, down the left, but then maybe my dynamic.
But you have the additional concern of the compressed representation on the left side.
Yeah, so it's like that's my concern is like the influence.
Your angles are going to change. Your angles are going to change.
Right. So that's something we didn't discuss that yet. So maybe we need to mention that is that like the, so like if I'm rolling my thorax and my rib cage, for instance, and I want to influence based on my archetype, I'm going to want to have more of a narrow angle to the foam roller. And the same will be true of like, if I'm trying to access the space between my sacrum and my like trochanter or whatever, I'm going to have to change the angle of which based on archetype, narrower or wider angle.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, and it's really counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's not what you think.
Right, because the yard pelvis is going to be a wider angle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
You can sort of, if you have a small enough roller, you'll be able to kind of sit it in the notch. So you won't have to think mm-hmm. too much about what angle you need to be on. It will sort of decide right. for itself.
It fits. Yes.
But you will need to think when you go up to the rib cage, if you're rolling, if you're trying to influence the turn through the rib cage, you will need to have either a wider or a narrower roller along those lines. That's not okay. counterintuitive.
Hang on, boss. All right. Now, it is actually counterintuitive. It's not what you think.
Okay.
It's not what you think. Because you're not accounting for how the spine would turn. Okay. It's the opposite. It looks opposite. Because think about the turn that I have to make as a wide ISA. Okay. And then think about where that, so use the, so that you have a vertical spine axis, but it's 24 segments. And yep. I want to turn one segment at a time. Okay. Right. So if I lay the foam roller too vertical, so on a more vertical helical axis, I won't have the segmental turn that I want.
Have to have more of a perpendicular orientation with the roller.
It's gonna fall towards a wider angle to turn the spine. And I'm talking very particularly here. I'm being yeah. very particular about what we're turning. Okay. Whereas if I was a wide ISA, I have to make this turn, this big turn. Okay. So it's a wider turn. So narrowest turn on this tight helical axis, which means I need a very segmental kind of a turn. Okay. It's going to be very spinal driven. Okay. I'm actually going to use the rib cage to turn the spine in the wide ISA. So I need a more vertical roll that goes across the rib cage to get more segments to turn on the flatter helix. Okay. That's the counterintuitive part. Right. Do you understand?
Yeah, I do, and I realize now that I've been doing it wrong for the last year. But that's okay. It's funny because
it would be nice if everything you mentioned that now,
but it's like when I'm rolling, it always ends up becoming more perpendicular.
Exactly.
And I just go with it. I'm like, best intentions. It just sort of like self-selects. But yeah, okay, that makes more sense now. I've been trying to do the goal
is to create the turn on the helix, and I need the pressures to be oriented in the right way to create that turn. So to turn on the helix, I actually need more surface area on the vertical to push things more sideways. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Versus the segmental, like I turn 1, 1, 1, 1, 1. Whereas with the wide, it's like I got to create this kind of this big turning motion. So I need a lot more volume, if you will, coming from right to left to make the turn inside the base of support.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well,
if you look at the shape of the sacrum on a wide, and then you look at the shape of the sacrum on a narrow, you get a little bit of a representation of this because the superior inferior dimension is smaller on the narrow. So you need to kind of catch it horizontally to get it to turn. And so like you just sort of project that up the spine. So it's kind of a neat little thing. Yeah. It would be nice if like, oh, narrow is always that. It's like you're trying to turn on the helix. You're not trying to orient the roller onto the helix necessarily. It's like, again, I'm being very particular about what we're trying to do here as far as the turns is concerned.
Gotcha. All right. Well, this was not for the general public whatsoever.
Not even close.
Yeah. I'm sure people were reeled into this one. They were baited into clicking on this and they were like, what are these guys talking about? But that's okay. Yeah. If you were interested in this topic and you managed to click on it and you've gotten to this point and you're not part of the network, like please join the network. You will find a lot of great value to the stuff that we are talking about, and it will actually help clear up a lot of things. Okay. So, for those 30 people that are still watching that we know who
we all got their 30 names now are, instead of six.
Well, it's the people that are on every call. So we know who they are. So What I want to know, so if anyone's paying attention, I have a Ravenclaw hat on right now. So I want to know, anyone that understands the Harry Potter universe, what house do they think Bill would belong to? And I won't mention anything, but I want to hear in the comments what people think that the house, the Hogwarts house, Bill would be. What would the sorting hat? What would the sorting hat pick for Bill Hartman? Bill has no idea what I'm saying.
I have no idea what you're talking about.